Testing. Okay. I think you're...
This is Bob Cottrell from the Crowley Museum and Nature Center down in Sarasota with Albert Trier and your name?
Willis Solana.
Okay, let's go ahead and get started.
Yeah, that should have been Trier.
Trier.
Right.
Yes. Albert Trier. Right? That's the way she said it to me. Well, if you could tell me, first of all, your relationship to each other and where you're from.
We first cousins.
First cousins. And you're from what area?
Elkton, Florida.
Elkton, Florida?
St. John's County.
Okay, and do you both work on the same ranch?
Well, we have years ago worked together with the cattle. But he farms now. Just a line of farms and
Albert, I'm back. Is she married? Where'd you go?
And I work strictly with the cows. That's all I have is a few head of cattle.
Mm-hmm. What kind of cattle is it that you have?
What?
Herefords or?
Crossbred. Uh-huh. They just crossbred cattle. They crossbred Hereford, Angus, and Brahma, some Charolais breeding. Uh-huh. But I keep purebred bulls with crossbred cows.
Do you have any of the red Brahma?
Red?
Yeah.
No.
Dog ears?
No, I don't use the red. I have. I like the white and the gray, the gray Brahma. Mm-hmm.
And have you ever worked with the scrub cow?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, many years. That was what we had to start with years back. And then they came in with the Brahma, the purebred Angus, and the white face, and then we got to crossbreeding them. And found out that made a good cross.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit what a scrub cow is?
Well, a scrub cow is just a plain old common longhorn cow. Most of them were horned cows, had horns. Once in a while, back years ago, you would find one that didn't have a butt-headed cow. Mm-hmm. But they were just a plain old resident scrub cows, what we call them. Some of them call them cracker cows. They were just scrub cattle.
Mm-hmm. And how did the scrub cows come into being?
Well,
how did we get scrub cows?
Some of my ancestors, which landed when they came from Monarchan Island, down at, what was the name of that beach?
New Smyrna?
Right. That's where they started, and then they first, according to my reading history, the Trier had three head of cows when they came into St. Augustine.
Oh, great.
And then they kept them and kept breeding them up and breeding them up. Of course, that was still scrub cattle right on the map. But it hasn't been, I guess, the purebred cattle came in effect in the last of the 20s and the early 30s.
It was pretty much all scrub cattle.
Right, up until then.
Well, do you know what kind of cattle your Menorcan ancestors brought over from Spain?
I really couldn't answer that.
Because what I understood is that they were domesticated cattle, and what happened was the cows bred and escaped and became semi-wild. And that's
right.
The longhorn scrub cows are semi-wild.
That's right.
Now, what was ownership like of the scrub cow when you first started cow hunting? Were they all branded?
It was open range years ago before.
No fences.
Well, we're talking about something like, what? Do you remember when Fuller Warren was governor?
No.
Well, I think it was when he was governor, and that must have been back. I don't remember. But anyway, we had the fence law was passed. Mm-hmm. Up until then, everything was open range. The cattle roamed wild everywhere. And they had to be marked and branded to distinguish his from mine and yours and other people. Everybody had a different brand, just like the brand I got in there, which is mine now. Mm-hmm. But everybody had a different kind of brand and a mark.
What a mark is a notch that's cut into the ear.
Into the ear is a mark.
What kind of notch was yours?
That's a brand there. That's a.
No, I know. This is.
Mine was Trapsol Satin each year. I remember mine.
W7?
You can get it from Tallahassee.
I'm sorry?
The mark is still recorded in Tallahassee.
The
every
ear
5 years, yeah. And also the brand.
Uh-huh.
I keep it up, although I don't use it anymore.
Uh-huh. What was your notch in the ear, your mark?
A swallow fork, an underbit, and an upper slope.
A swallow fork, underbit.
An underbit, and an upper slope.
And an upper slope. Okay, can you describe those terms a little bit more? Swallow fork, what's that?
Right. That's take a piece of notch out of the ear like this at the end of the ear,
uh-huh.
And then an underbit. Take a piece out from underneath that, the same ear, and the upper slope off of that.
Okay, so the upper slope is sort of just the
top of the ear.
And the underbit is
bottom edge.
The bottom edge.
Right.
And the swallow fork is somewhere in the middle?
Right in the end of the ear.
On the end, I see. Okay. And then your brand's the W7, I see.
Right.
And what's your
L.
Yours is
L.
Is this yours in here?
I don't have any.
Oh. And what was your mark?
Crop saw set.
Crop saw set.
Yeah.
And how can you describe that a little bit?
The end of the ear was cut right off, straight,
uh-huh.
The edge of it. And then it was a set like a saw blade cut in the bottom part.
I see.
Notch cut out.
I see. The process of notching is real interesting. Why was there a need to both notch, to both mark the ear and to brand the hide?
Kind of screwworm. One reason we had
screwworm
cut the ear off. They'd eat the ear off and didn't have. You couldn't tell the brand. They had to cut the ear off. And only chance you had.
And another thing about the ear mark, when you could see the cow standing off a distance, you could see the ears, and you wouldn't have to get right up close to them to see that brand on the cushion. We more or less branded them on the cushion, so
right.
I branded them in the ribs.
Uh-huh.
But when you could see that mark standing way off, maybe 100 yards, you could tell it was your cow or whoever cow it was without getting right real close to
it. I see, so it's very...
And then, like he says, sometimes we have these old dogs who we work cattle with, and they'll pull a ear,
spread their ear right out,
and disfigure the mark. But mm-hmm. That brand, they can't disfigure that. That'll be that.
I see. So there are practical reasons for both of them.
Two, yeah.
Where do you have any idea where that practice started of marking the cattle in that way, marking and branding?
It was back there at the beginning of uh-huh. When they had cattle first brought to this country. It was started way back then. I don't know. I mean, I couldn't answer that.
Uh-huh. Well, tell me a little bit about your experiences with cattle. How, when were you born, and how old were you when you first started working cattle? What was that like? How did you get started?
I was born in 1915. Ever when I was a little boy, I can recall way back, I wanted to be a cowboy when I was a little fella. My dad worked cattle. Well, mm-hmm. His dad did too. But I just always loved to fool with them and always had some. I think when I was about 4 years old, my mother and father gave me a calf. And ever since then, I've been without a calf.
Been doing it. Great.
And had a calf.
Great.
And I went to work for one of the biggest cattlemen in St. Johns County, and I think at the time he owned better than 10,000 head. That was all open range then.
Mm-hmm.
And,
about what period of time was this, say, 25, 30?
I was 20 years old when I started working for him, and I worked for that man for 36 years. And I started working for him for $1.50 a day.
What was his name?
S.A. Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
And that was $9 a week, and that was good money back in them days. That was back during the Depression time. I mean, right, and it was hard. You couldn't hardly get a job back in then. I was glad to get that.
Mm-hmm.
I started off working for 50 cents a day when I was, I did. When I was, I say, 16 years old, I worked for 50 cents a day. Then I got, when I got a dollar a day, man, I thought I was making big money when I got a dollar a day. But times has changed since them days.
And
everything has.
How did you get started? How did you learn to ride the horses? And to?
When I was, like I tell you, about maybe 4 years old, my dad would pick me up, put me up on the horse.
Uh-huh.
And for a long time when I was just a little fellow like that. I rode double with him. He rode the saddle and he'd put a blanket or a croaker bag on the back of the horse, and I sat behind him and held onto his shirt. Ride that way for a long time. Mm-hmm. And as I grew older, then he got me a pony later when I got big enough that he thought I could handle a pony. Mm-hmm. Well, and that pony threw me off more times than I got fingers and toes. He was a mean little fella.
I know how you feel. We've got a couple quarter horses, and they have minds of their own, you know.
They certainly do.
Yeah, we had an Appaloosa before that, and she was gentle as everything, and these quarter horses, spirited. Well, how about you? When were you born, and how did you get started cattle ranching?
Well, about like him, I was given a cow when I was small, and started from that. But I just have two or three cattle now. I own potato farm out there.
Potato farm. Well, so we'll talk more about the cattle ranch, and then we'll get into some farming. Does that sound okay?
Great.
You were talking about when you were young, you were introduced to the horse. And what different kinds of horses do you remember that you had?
Well, the first one I had was what you call a marsh pony. They raised wild over on the marsh north of St. Augustine. Well, they had them all the way down the marsh on both sides of St. Augustine.
A marsh horse.
Marsh pony.
Marsh pony.
What they call them. And they were big, quite a bit larger than they were like a Shetland pony. They grew up, they would weigh 700-800 pounds, a pretty good pony would, and a total grown man. And in fact, my daddy rode the one I had cow hunting before I was. Would go out on these week-long cow hunts. My daddy used to go off for a week at a time and have to take his ration and whatnot. And then when I started, I did that. I'd leave home on a Monday morning early, before daylight, and go to the headquarters where I kept the horse and so on. We wouldn't get back in until Saturday afternoon, about 4 o'clock. And we camped under these oak trees like this right down on the ground. We had carried our blanket and our slick our raincoat on the saddle. And of course, our boss man used to bring us, not every day, but he knew more or less where we were going to be camping at night from one place to another, which would be miles apart. Bring horse feed and dog feed and bring us our ration.
And what was his name, your first boss man?
Was that S.A. Snyder?
That was Snyder? Okay, yeah, but I thought you were referring to, a hired foreman-type person or supervisor or something.
Well, we did have a foreman with us, but there never was over 3 or 4 to 5 riding at one time.
Uh-huh.
3 most of the time.
So when you were camping out there, were you with a small group of people? And so, This is the hunt. This is the gathering of the cattle, getting them ready for a drive. Is that
well?
What it was?
To start with, I mean, when the cattle really became a problem, years before this came up, they'll more or less make about 2 roundups a year, and that was marking and branding in the spring.
Marking and branding.
Then
in the
later on in the summer, late summer, I would say July, August, they'd go back to them and gather beef cattle, which would be the steers, take the beef cattle out and drive them many miles to market and whatnot.
Okay.
And they have been known to drive them from St. Augustine to Gainesville, way over in that area. And then later, they have bought beef cattle over in that area, and some of my uncles went over there, and this was all did horseback. They didn't have trucks to transport the horses in those days. They would ride over there, and they would, I just don't recall the days, and then they would drive maybe a couple of hundred head of those beef cattle back and bring them right through towns. They brought them right through Palatka, right down Main Street, Palatka, across the river, St. John's River, on an old wooden bridge at that time. I can remember some of those drives. I was just a boy when they were doing that. But then came the tick, fever tick. We had a fever tick. Of course, we had the fever tick unknown to us for many years, I'm sure. We lost, my old forefathers and uncles and so on used to lose a lot of cattle, mainly in the wintertime, fever tick and so on. But then the government or state came in and found dipping them. They'd have to dip them and would kill out the fever tick, but we had to dip them. You remember every 14 days or every 3 weeks, which it was?
Not about every 2 weeks, I think.
I think it was every 2 weeks we had to get all them cattle up and dip them. Well, at that time, what cattle my uncles had, and great uncles, and my mother and father had too, and they sold them. The most they had scattered way away from home, like say 20 miles and such matter. They figured that they couldn't gather them. They was out in thick woods, rough woods and so on, and they figured that they wouldn't be able to gather them and take care of them. So they sold them, and they sold them for $9 and $10 a head, the whole cow.
Oh, boy.
Big bulls and steers and whatnot. That's all they got for them. I recall the same man that I'm talking about working for, he bought my mother's cattle. She had quite a few, and they were, I would say, 20 miles from home, and he gave her $9 a head for them. But then, after, it wasn't as big a problem as my dad and mother and my kinfolks thought it was going to be. It was quite a problem. Every week, I mean, every 2 weeks it had to be done. But
how long of a period? Like for a 6 month period?
It went on for 18 months, I think, we did, wasn't it?
Long time.
I believe it was around 18 months that we did. But it really helped the cattle industry. And from that day on, after they got rid of that fever tick, you could just see the cattle get thriving. Uh-huh. I mean, they just did so much better. They just grew and just kept getting better. And then right after that, right at the close of that dipping, that's when we started getting into purebred cattle, purebred bulls, and we cross them on them scrub cattle. And that's what we've got today, the majority of them. Of course, there's a lot of people that's got entire herds of purebred cattle, which I don't want. But still, somebody has to have purebred herd in order for me to get a purebred bull.
Right.
I like to get a purebred bull and cross them with a cow.
Did the fencing come in around the same period as the dipping?
No. Just as the dipping was over with us when we started getting the purebred cattle coming in, into this country.
And then when did they start getting the fence?
Oh, this is quite a few years after.
Well, after that process.
Yeah.
I see. Fence
law came in effect after that. And I
must have been in the 30s, late 30s.
Yeah, maybe 40. I really don't.
Let's go back to the three drives we were talking about and kind of go into more detail. The first in the spring, when the new cattle are born. Is that right?
Right.
And so you've got all these new cattle, these little calves, and you have to get out there. And how old are they when you begin marking and branding them?
Well, you can do it on a calf 2 or 3 days old. Right on up, it don't make any difference. But I mean, after they should be around a week old, but you can mark them and brand them. In other words, the younger they are, it's the least it seems to hurt them. What I mean, it don't bother them so bad. That is, in castrating them and whatnot.
To make steers out of them.
Right.
Well, some of them will be three or four months old.
You can get
them all together. You know, some of them early, some of them late.
How would that work? It be like, say, Mr. Snyder, I don't know what the numbers might be, but say he had 20 men, and they would all go out in, say, groups of five throughout the whole area. Is that sort of like how it would happen?
When it was open range, we more or less worked together.
Uh-huh.
All the farmers and the neighbors, most every farmer in the country had some cattle, and they've mixed all together.
Uh-huh.
Well, we went together and rounded up, say, maybe 200 or 300 head.
Uh-huh.
We got them into the pens. They would have to be mothered. The calves and the cow together, and like your cows and my cows or his cows.
And how do you do that? Just kind of wait until they...
Well, you could get in the pen with your horse and work them out, a cow and a calf, and put them in separate pens until got them out. Then they were marked and branded, and you could turn those up.
So say in this big pen, you cut a cow over and then wait and see what kind of calf goes?
They had hold-up pens, different. It wasn't one solid pen. There was four different sections in it. Turn them into.
It must require some pretty good horsework.
Yeah, sometimes it takes a lot of time for a calf to find out who you're
But and did you use the dogs in there too?
No, not in the pen.
So you're just
we
cutting
used
them
to
with
use the dogs to pen them. Though.
Right, but just cutting with the horses.
Hurt them. Another thing.
Generally a foot, a lot of times too. Pull a gate.
A lot. Way back there, years and years before, the old-time people used to pen all the cattle in the springtime in order to get fertilizer to grow their crops.
It
was no such a thing as buying fertilizer like we do this day and time with all the chemicals and whatnot in it. But they'd go out and have roundups. Like, say you had 100 head, I had 100 head, and he had 100 head. We'd get your cattle together and carry them to your place.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm talking about, this was in the springtime when the calves would be coming along, and maybe most of them would be calf. Then they'd close them up in maybe an acre or 2 acre place. Back in those days, it was small farms. Mm-hmm. They did with a horse and plow. And in the mornings, they'd get out there and separate, let the cows go out in the woods to get their living feed and pull the calves in the pen. And in the afternoons late, sometimes the cows would more or less come back for the calves that afternoon, but there would be some that wouldn't have calves, and the boys, that's when the boys came in, they'd have to go, the young lads would go out there and round them up and round them into the pen, into the pen in the afternoon. But they grew back in them days, and that was the biggest crops, was sugar cane, sweet potatoes, corn, watermelons, and just such as that. And they would plant a few Irish potatoes, but back then days there's very few Irish potatoes being planted. But they used to raise, oh my goodness, the finest kind of sugar cane and watermelons and corn too. And it didn't cost much back those days to live. We had, our parents had chickens, big flocks of chickens, and maybe once a week on Saturday we had hogs. And we fed that corn to the chickens and the hogs, and they'd take the eggs to town maybe on Saturday and buy more groceries. And what we had, they'd get a little change come back out of a basket of eggs that they'd take to town and get all the groceries paid for. And then we had our own meat. Didn't have that to buy.
Was the
pork and beef.
Was the Roundup like a social event? You were saying that there were a lot of families involved in this.
Yeah, they'd get together and have those roundups.
Would they have a purlieu or anything like that go with it?
Purlieu, yes.
Purlieu?
They had what?
Purlieu? With
Like they cook it.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Home, they could get there.
Yeah. But most
of the
time...
Did they ever have dancing or parties or anything like that?
No.
It was too far back in the woods. And that was just woods days.
Yeah. So
But the band that I worked for did, in later years, there was a lady, and she was a good cook in St. Augustine, that would make us, cook us a pot of beef stew and a pot of rice, and he would bring it out to us. That's occasionally, maybe once a week, or I might not do it that much once a week, or maybe a perlo or something like that.
Well, so how exactly do you get a cow that is out in the woods to go into a pen? How do you find it, first of all?
Oh, you just got to keep it looking.
Yeah.
You separate. When you get in the woods, one person would go one way, and then you'd meet. You know the woods. And you'd see a certain area somebody going to meet, and we'd just scout the woods until we found it.
Okay.
And we always had these whips here.
Uh-huh.
You found it, you popped that whip, and another fellow would hear you. And that was
you,
a good
sign. You could hear it for a mile.
They had signals for those whips. You could signal
them. He's telling me a little bit about how the three or four...
Fast pops,
fast whip was something.
That was a signal something was wrong. You needed
help.
And so how would you know that everything was okay, but you found a cow?
Once, every once in a while, and they could hear you when you... We'd always have places to meet when we would separate. So, like, we'll meet at...
You never heard anything. Then nobody found it.
That's for sure.
And it's another wasted day.
Yeah.
We'd
eventually find it.
But if you heard the cow dogs being, you know that they'd be found a cow.
So
the cow,
dogs, would you pretty much rely on the dogs then to scout them out?
A good dog was worth for two men driving a cow.
They could pick up the scent and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they'd trail them up.
You wouldn't even know they're there. You're being... Uh-huh.
Did you ever run into any
I don't.
Or have you ever heard of the term mossy horn? That's the term they use down in Manatee County for the outlaw cows, that their horns have grown so long that they, you know, get the Spanish moss out of the trees. Do you ever find outlaw cows that have been out there for a long time?
We had one or two that was outlaws who couldn't bend.
And we just butcher them right out there if you find them?
Well, this, I here remember that particular area. We had one on Man's Spiders. Remember out there? 195 across the old cow fence.
Yeah,
the dogs who run that booger that day was going, every time we pinned him one time, I think. And he jumped the pen.
Yeah.
And every other time he couldn't ride it. But we had a bunch of dogs that day. And they caught him. They eventually caught him.
Mm-hmm.
And we took him to the pen and they roped him in the pen because he was fixing to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And they carried him through the chute into a truck and killed him. And then forget, with a rope on his horns. Remember that?
I forget, so my memory's getting so short. I don't remember as much, but I do remember a little bit about that.
They wouldn't turn him loose because he fence high as that day, he'd go right over it.
But there's very few cattle being killed on the county. You can't pin them because there's cowboys this day and time. That's what those lariats are made for,
yeah,
to rope them, and they got good horses that can pull them around and carry them to the pen. But we did have, years back, great big old Brahma bulls that get so ornery, and they was too much really to handle them. We have took big rifles out there and fashion shot them. This was back several years ago, and had to have come along or something to load them in a truck or a trailer and carry them to the butcher house and butcher them up, which made hamburger out of them.
Right.
But nowadays, they got it down so until you can't hardly do that now on account of the inspectors, government inspection. Mm-hmm. They got to have them government inspected, and then they want to see them alive when they put into a butcher pen, a slaughter pen.
So the dogs would, you would ride out with your dogs, and you would find the cattle, and you would, what do you do after the dogs have found the cattle?
Stop the dogs off of them and move them on, and then if they...
Would you move them on with your whip, cracking the whip over the men?
Yeah, sometimes they'd break it. You don't tell them how many times, and the dog would get on them again.
Uh-huh.
But after he chewed his nose a few times...
And that's called bulldogging.
Get ready to get back in.
Uh-huh.
Come back.
Okay. Let's see, what...
There's Charlie. You want to get up here, Charlie, with us?
No, I don't want to.
We were just talking about the Roundup, and I've never been on one, never seen one. Yeah, and
he is the king of the Roundup people right there.
And we were just getting into talking about the dogs. What kind of dogs did you use, and what was special about them? What kind of names did you have for them?
Crossbred dogs. In the last years, the leopard blood came in effect, and some have purebred leopard dogs, but we crossbreed those leopard dogs with say hound and bull, just cur dogs.
Pit bulls.
And bull and but I'll tell you, like I heard an old fella say one time, you got to have more sense than that dog to train him. The training is important.
I was
going to
say, how exactly do you train a dog that can grab
some
hold
you,
on
some
a
you can never train
on a bull and pull him down?
The best way to train a cow dog, or most any kind of dog, for as that goes, is to have one old trained dog, and then you can take a young dog with that, and when you send that one ahead or send him to work, that young one will soon learn. He'll follow that older dog. But if you just got one, if you don't have an old trained dog, I have trained them right from scratch. And some of them are more or less born trained. You get some that's already, you might say born trained. All you have to do is stop them. It's bred in them to go. And then it's like he just said, some of them you can't train. I've killed a many one of them.
What kind of signal do you use to stop them?
Well, whistle to them, or holler at them, or that draw that rawhide on the back.
The experience I had with the man that he knows very well, Charles Cowart in Flagler County, he was about 15, maybe a little longer years ago. He was helping me pin some cows, and he had his dog, he would take his pistol out there, and he would just snap it. And that dog would stop like that.
Snap it without a bullet, you mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Just that
dog would stop like
that?
That's the most fascinating thing you ever saw.
I wonder how he trained him to do that.
you can shoot him with rat shot.
Uh-huh.
A rat shot.
Is that the salt?
And a .22 pistol.
Uh-huh.
I have one I keep in my saddle pockets all the time now. I imagine if you x-rayed my dogs, you'd find a lot of rat shot in them right today. Because they know what it is. And like he says, after you do that a few times, and you haul at them and they won't come back, all you got to do is just take it out and shoot it one time, and that gets it.
They
off right back.
They remember that shot.
The one dog is worth three men.
That's true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Maybe four.
Probably.
Did you ever... borrow a good dog to breed with or to train with? You're saying that...
Oh, yeah, we do that. There's cattle people that have better dogs than others, and now we'll take and breed them and raise pups from them and whatnot. I'm going to tell you this, little instance. I had one. I've had many good dogs, and I've had many sour ones, too. But I had this particular dog that is very rank. I mean, take hold, took eyes, nose, time, it run off. And so I used to wear a muzzle on. Mm-hmm. And the dog's name was Ring. Big dog. It was a lady dog. She was a big dog, stood that high. But if a cow went in that swamp, like got off that bad swamp, I put her on that cow to bring it out. She'd go in there and bit for a while, and you'd hear her stop, listen. She was listening for me to whistle or mm-hmm. pop whip for her. I'd holler or whistle for her. She'd come out of there with that muzzle and come jump and put her front feet up on my leg, right on the hole. I'd unsnap that muzzle, and boy, that's all she wanted. She went back in that swamp. When she come out of there, 9 times out of 10, she'd be swinging on that joker's nose. That'd be maybe a big old bull or an yeah. old outlawed cow.
So when
she put it back in the bunch, it'd come right onto the bunch. Ain't glad to get in that bunch.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'd let them totter in the bunch of cattle before I'd holler at her. Uh-huh. Then okay. I'd I'd holler to her, speak to her. She was very easy-headed. I could just talk to her like I'm talking to you.
Uh-huh.
She'd come back, put her front feet up there, and I'd sprint that muzzle back on her.
Snap the muzzle
because,
back on.
And if a yearling or calf or something like that, oh, she...
Here we are.